This is Plans, Hope, and a Future podcast with Jennifer Osborne. This episode of Plans, Hope, and a Future is sponsored by Jenny Becknell. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Plans, Hope, and a Future. I hope this podcast finds you well. We're so excited that you are here. I am excited about our guest today. It is someone I have been acquainted with. We don't travel, I don't think, in the same circles, but we had met once before many years ago at Crossroads Church. She is a podcaster doing a new podcast called Chasing the Carrot. She is known as the Bee Coach, which is life coaching and business coaching. And she is addressing through the Chasing the Carrot, her what she calls herself, and that is a love addict. So welcome to the show, Christine Bunnell. How are you?
Hi, Jen. I'm awesome. How are you?
I am doing great. You are down in Florida, and you said you were having some storms tonight. So
yeah, that's just typical St. Pete for you. The storms come in, and usually they blow out, you know, within an hour. So yeah, I thought I was going to be on my screen, but our wireless shut down.
Yeah, so your Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Wi-Fi. So thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you tonight.
Oh yeah. Thank you. I'm glad that you're here. I'm excited about what our conversation will reveal about some of the insights and things that you've gained both in your life coaching and business coaching, and also in you are writing a book and doing a podcast on Chasing the Carrot. And I read some of the excerpts from that you had out there, and I thought it was really super interesting. So, I think it's going to be a great conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So tell me a little bit about your life coaching and your business coaching.
Well, I come out of the agency world. So I worked for LPK and Interbrand, which are two brand agencies in Cincinnati. And so I moved down to Florida when I got engaged and started working for a company called Aveda down here in St. Petersburg. And pretty much once, and this is kind of where Chasing the Carrot and the story starts, is once my fiance and I broke up, I made kind of this 180 and I decided, you know, I really wanted to do the things that I was built for. I raised my daughter on my own. So I always worked really hard because I had to support my daughter. But in this kind of change in my life, in this 180, I realized that when I wasn't honoring who I really was, it caused stress and it caused me to work harder and harder. And at some point, when you continue to work that hard and you're not living on purpose, the return on the investment dwindles eventually.
Yeah.
And so when I made this change, not just with, ending the engagement, at that time I decided I really wanted to start doing something that I was built for. And coaching was something that I was always interested in. I'd been studying personal development for 20 years. And not only that, to be transparent, because I was a single mom, I started seeing a therapist when I was probably like around 25. I was navigating a divorce at that time. And my brother and sister lived abroad and my parents were divorced and my friends were all being 20-year-olds. And so I didn't know how to be a great mom. And I had gone back to school. I didn't know how to move, you know, take care of her and do everything that I needed to do and stay sane. So very young, I started to see therapists and I really read self-help books. And I ended up starting to go to personal development seminars in Cincinnati. And I was fascinated by the human spirit. I've always been a believer. So even, you know, in my faith, I always could feel that sense of wholeness when I was practicing my faith, so to speak. So the whole point is when I made this 180, I just started down the coaching kind of path and got certified and ended up earning about 5 certifications and then started speaking. And then every year now I hold the annual vision workshop in downtown Cincinnati. And that's why, your good friend Kelly was one of the table leaders. So anyhow, I think that was a really long way to answer your question.
Boy, that had to be super challenging at 25 to be a single mom and navigating a divorce. I'm not even sure how you begin to even unravel that. So it was quite insightful of you to go into counseling.
Well, you know, my yeah, thank you for acknowledging that. I did not want to go. I think my mom really saw that I was struggling, and she's like, "Why don't you see a therapist?" I'm like, "No way. That's so uncool." And she offered to, I think, maybe pay for the first session. She's like, "Just try it, you know." And from that first time, I really felt some relief, and I felt like, and I knew I needed to divorce my daughter's father, and I needed help with that. So anyhow, it wasn't, when you're in one of, and I'm sure you've gone through this too. I think most people do. When you're faced with a really big challenge, you don't have a choice. It's just like, you dig in and you just do the next thing and then the next thing, and slowly God, leads you to where it is that you're destined to go. But
Yeah, so speaking of God and your journey, how did you come to faith? Were you brought up in the church? Did you come to faith in adulthood? Like, share a little bit about that.
well, we were Catholic, and I don't know if that's all I need to say. But so we, went to church, 4 or 5 times a year. The Bible was never cracked open in our home, so I knew really nothing of the Bible. I just, heard, what I heard in church. And we had to go to CCD. I don't know if you've ever heard that
I do,
acronym.
yes. And I've been to CCD classes, so yeah.
And we were a little bit mischievous. I mean, there was, I had siblings, and then once my sister could drive, then there was some neighbors and there were siblings there. So 6 of us would pile in a car. And, a lot of times we'd skip CCD. I mean, it wasn't good. None of us liked it. And so when I really, to answer your question, I always believed, but I didn't have a relationship with God or with Christ in a way that I do now. So once I had my daughter, and I went through that divorce, I wanted to go back to church. I didn't know that's where my faith would start getting stronger, but that's where I just felt this peace by returning to church and taking her and just sitting there for an hour and just, as an adult, really appreciating it, if that makes sense. And I always did BSF, Bible Study Fellowship. But honestly, it's really interesting is, you mentioned at the beginning, the love addiction. And that's something that I had never heard of in my life until I was kind of going through this for the last time after a really tumultuous 8 years with my fiance. I was on the phone with a therapist. And in fact, I was looking into doing an, not, it's not an intercession. What is it when, like, you've got someone in the family and you want people to come
An
to?
intervention?
Thank you. I knew part of the word there, but I was looking for somebody else. I was concerned about a family member, and I was like, I need to do something here. And ironically, I started calling around, actually the whole U.S. to really find the best. And someone on the other line mentioned that word, and my whole body, it was like a visceral reaction. And I'm like, what is that? I've never even heard of that. And I was 49 years old by this time. And when they started like describing it to me, I was like, oh my gosh, that's like everything just started to unlock. It was like that made sense for the divorce and why I had walked away from another wedding and I had broken up on an, it was just like it all finally made sense. And that's when I decided to check myself into a recovery center for it because my daughter had, Yeah. I mean, it was, I had, my daughter had, as a single parent, I was her role model. And I was like, and when you see it, you can't unsee it, right?
Right.
And
Can't pretend it's not there then.
no. And because it made so much sense to me, it's like, oh, that's why this, and that's why this, and that's why I've been, it was just like, I've got to do something about it now because I've got a daughter who's watching me.
Yeah.
And I had read the books and I had gone to therapists and I had hired coaches. And it wasn't like I could do any of that. It was like I knew what I needed to do. And I hadn't known anyone that had done something like that. But because I wanted to show up for my daughter, she had gone through enough, right? And I was
Yeah.
just like, this has to end now, and I need to get help. Because it's not about him. It's not about my job. It's not about making more money. It's not about anything else. It's about me and
Yeah.
fixing this, right? And so that's the year that I totally gave my life to Christ, because not only did I go through that whole experience, but when I got home from that experience, things just got worse. And I thought, how can they get worse when I just invested that much money, that much time, made such
An
an
effort.
investment?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm getting worse. And that's when I just hit my knees and I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm tapped out. I don't have any more ideas, And that's when everything started to shift for me. So I would say that I always believed and I always had great faith. But even when I was in that tumultuous relationship, I was very much a Christian. Like when I think of going to BSF every single week and doing the homework and getting in the word, and I still didn't know this was like an undercurrent, that this was kind of sabotaging me. And that's why I decided to start telling my story, because I'm like, if I didn't know, as this woman that kind of moved up the ranks in corporate America and raised my daughter, and I raised her in Wyoming, and if I didn't know, how many other women don't know,
Yep. And speaking of that, explain a little bit about what love addiction is and how you really came to recognize that in your life.
Well, love addiction is a form of codependency, which I think are more familiar with codependency, but it kind of comes out of the way you were raised, right? So it's like generational. And I think what most people think is if you're codependent, then you're probably attracted to someone that has an addiction, right? That's kind of the general rule. But codependency is when you're in unhealthy relationships, or maybe I should just say you're in an unhealthy relationship with yourself. And so it's almost like you look for outside circumstances to make you whole. So if I can give you a specific example, I think that if I made this much money, or if I drove this car, or if I dated this person, or once I got married, if I could be this package, I would finally be whole. And I don't know if I'm really giving you the clear definition of codependency or love addiction, but a very, very clear sign of it is I was divorced by 25. When I dated, I did stay with people for 4 or 5 years, but I was engaged and almost got married. And a week before the wedding, I called it off because I was like, I'm not sold on this guy. And he was a great guy, And then my former fiance that I'd been with for 8 years, we hadn't been engaged once. And called it off. The relationships just were up and down and up, and down. And my friends would get, an earful about who I was dating. It was just never calm. It was just, and because of that, it was extremely taxing. It took a lot of my energy, and it just wasn't good for me. I think we all have friends that you're like, why are you dating that guy? He's not good for you. You could do so much better. Well, I was one of those friends. I was that person, So anyhow, I don't know if that's enough of an example to kind of describe what it looks like. But it does kind of hijack your best. And all your energy ends up going onto another person rather than focusing on yourself. And so I couldn't be who it was that God created me to be because I was so focused on other people and trying to, it's like being a people pleaser, right?
Yeah, or high performer, which it sounds like you were to a degree. I mean, you're successful in business. You are a great life coach, business coach. You're doing the things. You were in corporate America. You are doing all those very performing types of things, which then reward you, right, for a job well done. It can condition you to cause and effect in very transactional types of relationships.
Very well said, Jen.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was very well said. And so I would agree with that.
Yeah. That's, I mean, gosh, we are so, at least in this country, attuned to doing things like that. Like our worth gets so wrapped up in our performance. If we do XYZ, it proves we have value. And if we don't do XYZ, then somehow we don't have value. And that is so counter to who God says we are. And his opinion is the one that should matter the most, right? He values us just because we are.
So, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what were some of the things that you had to start doing to try to unravel from a love addiction or a codependency?
That is a great question. Well, I started kind of, so it's all habitual, right? The way we think is habitual. And I think that's why a lot of my coaching kind of even harkens back to that time, because as I had to start new thinking patterns, and I had to practice this myself, when I'm coaching people, like I can see who I used to be in them. And it's just like, hey, listen, you can do this. It's just a matter of practicing a new way of thinking. So some things that we did, and when I talk about the recovery center, I call it camp. So if I say camp, just know it's the recovery center. There were horses and everything. So it was a little...
That's a very like altruistic way to look at that. We were at camp.
Right. It's easier to say. It's shorter too. But one of the things that... there was like a men's facility and there was a woman's facility, which were simply houses. And then between the two, and this was kind of out at 100 acres of woods, like in the middle of nowhere in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And in between those two was a lodge. And so every morning at 8 a.m., we would have to be at the lodge at that time. And when we got there, the first thing we had to do is fill out a check-in sheet. And then we journaled literally for like 30 minutes. So the first 30 minutes for the time that I was there, it was about checking in with yourself. Right. So there were, questions like, how do you feel? What do you want? And then you'd have to identify your feelings, which I thought was such an interesting practice, because I think when you ask people today, how are you? Most people will say fine, because most people don't know their feelings. And I don't know. Have you ever heard this acronym for fine?
Frenet-
I won't say it.
Neurotic
it means the opposite of fine, but right. We had to start identifying our emotions. Like literally there was when you turn the sheet over, all these feelings were listed, and part of the work was like starting to get in relationship with your emotions. And it sounds like, so like, why do I have to do this? Like, is this really going to help me? But interestingly enough, when you know those emotions, they end up being your superpower. So there's a lot behind it, and I don't need to get into that now. But so the first 30 minutes, I started this journaling practice and I had never journaled before. And that was 10 years ago. I don't know if I've missed a day of journaling since. It was for a reason, like I was, I had an early morning flight or I was sick. But the point being is that one of the practices that really allowed me to start unraveling was journaling. And that's one of the reasons I wrote my story, is because it came out of that, and that's where I really meet God on the pages. I'm always just amazed, or I'm in tears, or, it's just a really beautiful place to get to know yourself.
Well, truly, because your emotions are just indicators of something else going on internally. So if you can't identify what you're feeling, you really can't get to what is actually going on. And that just sounds like a fantastic exercise to really get to know, how am I feeling about this? Like, how am I processing? Where am I going? And slowing down long enough to really seek that out in yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's even more science behind it. There was not only there at camp did we, it's called, there was a practice that we would do on a weekly basis. And I'm not thinking of the name right now, but basically what they said is all your emotions are welcome and all of them hold the exact same value. I think most people think happy is good and sad is bad, right?
Right, right. There's
and
no moral value.
No, every one of them is extremely valuable and they serve a purpose. And when we start not wanting that feeling, it's almost like, you know, if you have your arm, it's like cutting off your arm because it's causing a, you know, a problem or pain. So you want to get to know them and be in relationship with them because, and this is what sounds a little woo-woo, is they will inform you. They will inform you in just brilliant ways. And what I was going to tell you is there was a, I don't know if you've ever heard of Dr. David Hawkins. He was a PhD. He was an MD. And I think he was knighted, literally knighted for this work. And he has since passed. And he wrote this book, Power Versus Force. And he created something you can just Google. It's called the Levels of Consciousness. And he assigned frequencies to every one of your feelings. So shame. Shame is at 40, right? Shame is the bottom feeling. And enlightenment, where Jesus lived, is at like 400.
Wow.
And so every single emotion has a frequency. So you've heard about the law of attraction and, you know, I'm not going to get woo-woo on that, but it's based in science that when we are in these levels of, you know, these frequencies, they're indicators. And if when you're low, you attract in the same kind, when you vibrate, it attracts something to you, right? So anyhow, I don't have to go down that road, but it's fascinating.
Boy, that does sound super, super interesting.
Yeah.
It's like,
but learning
in
all that just has really served me well. And it serves my clients so well because I know exactly where they are when they start talking. And they can ladder up those emotions just through gratitude. You know, like gratitude is this elixir that when, even if you're at shame or anger and you can just be grateful that you notice that, you can move up a notch, right? And if you can stay appreciative to every one of those feelings, you continue to kind of move up the ladder. So I don't know. Don't get me going, Jen. I get so excited about all this stuff.
No, I love it because, I've said many times on the podcast, and my regular listeners know this, like that I am a super feeler. I love my emotions. I feel like it's my superpower. One of my missions in life is to, especially in the church world, is to get people to accept emotions just that they are and to feel them and experience them, that they're not sinful. They have no moral value. There's not bad, good, and emotions aren't fact. They are just, like you said, indicators that something deeper is going on, and God gave them to us for a purpose. And God was an emotional God. He got angry. He could get jealous, but he's the only life force in this world, out of this world. He's God that can express those things perfectly. It's just we as sinful human broken people, when we act on our emotions, we tend to go into sinful actions. Like if I get mad, rather than just saying I'm mad because anger is secondary and something deeper like hurt. If I were to get mad and punch you in the face, the action of punching you in the face is the sin. It's not the anger. So,
I love that. Yeah. Well said. Yeah. This, an analogy that always has been super helpful to me about that. So I totally agree with you, is that maybe the example they use, I think that's where I learned it at camp, is they're like, okay, you, the part of you that's connected to God, is driving a bus, and just think of all your emotions in the back of the bus, you know? And when anger comes up, and starts telling you, it wants to hijack, but you are the driver. So sit and listen to the anger, but you tell anger, I'm the driver here. I'm going to take care of you. I want to hear everything that you have to say, but I'm driving, and tell me everything and then go back and sit down and I'll take care of it. Right. Like, you don't let anger start driving the bus.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
You don't let it take you to those sinful places that you act on something that may or may not inform on fact. It's just informing on what you're feeling. Like,
exactly.
Somebody may say something to me that I get hurt by, and my hurt doesn't mean that they were truly trying to hurt me or, you know, with their words, but it's just in how I received it. So yeah, just stuff like that. It's really good. It's super good to really get to know yourself and your emotions. And I really love that, what'd you call it? The camp that they, that they started you there, because that's like bare bones basic of learning about yourself and learning self-compassion too. Like, if you're constantly struggling with jealousy or, you know, anger or whatever it is, just learning how to identify that it's there and have compassion on yourself, right? I'm feeling this emotion. There's no moral value to it. It just means something else. Okay, self, let's figure this out.
No, I love that. I think that's a great point. And that was something that was something else that I learned. And this was before I went to camp, is, you know, there's a critical parent and then there's a loving parent, right? And I remember this therapist said to me, she's like, how often are you in a place where you think you're a loving parent versus a critical parent? And I had to think about it, and I was like, I probably am 90% of the time a critical parent and probably only a loving parent to myself 10%. And even like saying those numbers, I was like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah.
That's no wonder that I'm reactive. No wonder that I'm like, I'm so demanding of myself. Like, I, you know, and yes, I learned that, but I guess the point in telling you is that becoming aware of when I was being critical, and it's like, wow, there's an option here. So you've got to kind of slow down your thoughts, become aware, like, and then make a different choice. And all that takes time. All of that has to be driven with, I really want to change, right? But we're all of us are moving so quickly anymore that, like, how do you slow down to become aware, to change the way you are, you know, and all that. So this, it's not easy. However, right, it's the best thing I could have ever done for me, because I mean, I am a different person. I just feel very solid and grounded and rooted. And when things come my way, I slow down. I'm not who I used to be, and I'm really proud of who I used to be. I mean, I'm really proud of my daughter, and, although I was codependent and things weren't perfect, you know, my point being is, that's why most people don't do this work. It is very hard.
Yeah.
And you've got to really want change before you're going to go to the trouble to master your mind, right? So that your mind's not mastering you. And I was in enough pain, and I had seen what my results were, and I knew that it was work that was deep, and I knew that it wasn't about, and you know, anything else. So anyhow.
See, that's awesome. I love that so much. So how, when you learned a lot of that and started to really know yourself, how did it transform relationships around you? How did it transform your communication and prayer life with God? Like, how did that impact?
It wasn't good at the beginning, you know, because, I not only did my, you know, former fiance and I eventually break up, because when I was in camp, they were like, and I would think about it, is they're like, don't break up with them because you think you should or your reaction. You need to take your time and make a really clear decision, because what codependents or love addicts do is it's the back and forth, the breaking up, getting back together is almost the norm. And so they wanted to temper that. They wanted me to temper that so that when I made a decision, it was a decision once and for all, right?
Yep.
And so that stretched out over about 6 months before I finally did it. So that was one big relationship. And there was a lot of, because we were together for 8 years and I did love him, there was a lot of grief around that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like a divorce for me. But I also started recognizing that I was in groups of friends, that the same thing was happening. I would leave, you know, there were some women that I would have dinner with once a month. And when I would leave, I would have this sense of, you know, why wasn't that fun? Or why didn't, I would leave not feeling good, honestly. It wasn't like I left going, man, that was so much fun. I was like, something's off. And finally, I remember saying to my therapist, like, you know, I don't get it. And she says, why are you friends with them? I'm like, I've been friends with them for 20 years. She's like, so why would you stay friends? And I'm like, because I've been friends with them for 20 years, you know? And she's like,
the expectation.
Yeah. And then, you know, and maybe one of them will hear this. And it wasn't that they were doing anything. It was that when I started valuing myself more, then it was almost like I would notice that people weren't valuing me, you know? And in those friendships, I was noticing that for the first time because I guess unbeknownst to me, I didn't notice it when people undervalued me. So it was an interesting, so what I'm trying to say is that my relationships had to change. I had to walk away from that group of women who were lovely women, but if I wasn't valued in it, why would I stay in, you know, in that group?
Yeah.
Yep. And it's hard. It was hard for them to understand. And then, but I had to leave room to start forming new relationships with people that I loved and who loved me. And for a while there was an emptiness, you know, but I would rather be with myself and God and journaling and doing what was really true to me than spending time with people that, that it wasn't truly a valuable relationship. I don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah. You had a reclassification of yourself, therefore it reclassified relationships.
Did you just make that up?
I did.
Wow. That was good.
No, thank you.
Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, I took a lot. I really slowed down in my life. I mean, fortunately, I had a couple 4 units in Wyoming. And I just moved in when I left Florida to move back to Cincinnati. I just moved into one of my little 1-bedroom apartments. And it allowed me some time to slow down, you know, and just kind of get to know myself at 49, which is bizarre if you think about it. But I remember kind of my my tagline when I decided to start my coaching business was do less, be more, you know, because I realized that doing was like I had to do all the time. I had to perform. What should I do? Who can I make happy? You know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like, I don't know exactly what I want, but I know I don't want to be rushing all the time and worrying all the time and pushing myself. I just need to just get off this merry-go-round for a little bit and figure out, you know, who I am, what I want. And that took time. I just, like I said, I'm fortunate that I had this 4-unit that I could kind of walk away from my life for a little bit and regroup before I, you know, started creating my business. But it allowed some space to get to know myself and be alone for a while. And I honestly, I loved it.
That's so cool. That is so cool. So before we wrap up, related to your coaching, and it sounds like you have the ability to really give some fantastic insights. Who is your main demographic that you serve with your life coaching, business coaching?
Another great question. Thank you. I would say it's women between 40 and 60. A lot of times the women I work with either own small businesses or want to go from corporate to starting a business. The kids are usually out of the house, so they're empty nesters or they haven't had kids. And they're at a place in their life where they know that they're made for more, but they're stuck. So what I help them do, because I come out of the branding world, and whenever we would start a new brand, it always started with a vision. And so what I help women do is get crystal clear on what it is that they truly want, their deepest desires, because once you get clear, it's kind of like a GPS. Once you put in those two coordinates, you can talk on the phone, you can eat Wendy's in the car, you can eat chips. You just know where you're going and you don't worry about it, right?
Right.
So that's what I help women do. And it's pretty amazing because, I remember one woman, I worked with her for a year, and when we started, she was ready to divorce her husband. I mean, literally, she wanted help divorcing her husband when she hired me. And by the end of the year, she was totally in love with her husband. but she had fallen in love with herself over that year, and it changed everything. I've had one woman wanted to really grow her business, and she ended up at the end of the year and a half selling her business. So I think we think that this thing has to happen, a divorce or a business has to grow. And when in fact, we really just need to get really clear on what we want, and then things start to open up for us. So
That's
again,
great
a really
advice.
long answer, but
No, it's awesome. I love it. And I know that's beneficial to people out there that are listening that are looking for that. And so, yeah, well done.
thank you.
So I think we're going to wrap it up there, Christine. I have so enjoyed this conversation and getting to know you and learning about learning emotional intelligence and, some of the things that you kind of went through in your journey. And I just really bless chasing the carrot, and I hope it is super productive and yeah, just really bless that.
Oh, thank you. And did you know that chasing the carrot was like carrot like a diamond?
Yes. Saw the spelling. I was like, oh, that's pretty. That was a cute little clever play on words. Yes. And I saw one of the cartoons in your blog where a person was running and the diamond was dangling off the end. I'm like, oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, if I can, the whole story is actually going online. Every week I release a chapter. So it is something you can just check out on my website if somebody wants to read it. And I do have a couple events coming up, so I'm happy to pass that on to you if you want to put it in the show notes. But
Perfect. Yes.
yeah, I really appreciate it. It was really fun to talk to you too, Jen. You had
Yeah.
great questions, and I didn't realize that you were kind of into this emotional intelligence, kind of, I don't know the right
Yeah.
word. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm
could
telling
talk to
you.
you, talk to you about that for hours.
Oh, yeah.
We're emotion geeks.
I'm telling you, for me, it was something I grew up being made to feel shame for. And
Oh,
when I got
interesting.
into adulthood, God just revealed to me He had made me the way He had made me on purpose, and to really embrace that. And so I did. And now, like I said, it's my superpower. So one of my missions in life is to help others or encourage others to embrace their emotions and not push them down, not to translate them in a way that's super unhealthy or put fact on them or emotional value or moral value onto them. Yeah, just stuff like that. So, yes,
I love
ma'am.
that.
Yeah.
I'm going to file that away. You never know. I might have to do a workshop and have you do it with me.
Oh, I would love that.
All right.
Man, if you do that, yes, you know where to find me and
I
I'm
will.
on board for sure.
Okay.
All
Well,
right.
thank you. I really enjoyed talking to you too, and I appreciate you asking me to be on your podcast. I'm
Yeah,
honored.
gladly, gladly. All right. All right, folks, until next week, thank you and be blessed.
You've been listening to the Plans, Hope, and a Future podcast with Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2025 by Parable Road, LLC.